This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not contain or replace your own financial, tax, legal, or financial product advice.
Hello, Australia. Welcome to My Millennial Answers. I'm Glenn James. This is John Pigeon. And today we are answering your questions. We haven't done one of these episodes for a little while. If you are interested in sending in a question, send it through somehow. I don't know. We'll get it. We'll add it to the question bank.
Pigeon carrier.
And we will answer your questions. But the first one today is from Harriet. How much savings should I have set aside to start my own business?
Thousands, Harriet.
Thousands.
I think it really depends on what type of business you're running. Is it product? Is it service? And yeah, you just need to factor in, write down a list of things that you would need in your business to just start it up and get it going. I'm from the view of just get it going.
Yeah.
Like have your buffers, but if you've got your buffers in your personal life sorted, then all this business stuff is cream if you're doing it as a side hustle. I wouldn't go crazy, would you?
No, I would first work out, like, if you can do it on the side to start with, absolutely. See if you can slowly put your toe in, because you want to line as many ducks up as possible to start with.
Yeah.
Now, when I started my own business, I actually couldn't do it on the side by law, because I could only be licensed as a financial advisor. So, however, if Harriet wanted to start something and she was already working in that industry and she wanted, I'll just make it up, a marketing consultant. Mm. So she was working in marketing and she wanted to have her own marketing consulting company, there's no reason why she can't set up a website. She can't start to put her feelers out there just to line up a few ducks.
Totally.
But in terms of how much savings should you have set aside? Well, the answer is as much as possible. Now, I would say before you jump ship, we want to make sure you've got no personal debt in your life. We want to make sure that your cash flow is lean as possible. And maybe if you can start by doing some things on the side after hours or weekends, or take a week off annual leave and just smash out a heap of work and moonlight, I don't know.
Yeah.
Obviously, you'd want to just make sure you're being ethical and moral.
Yeah.
But the whole thing is, before you jump ship, you want to make sure that ship is as close to the dock as possible because you don't want to fall in.
No, and you want to know how to swim, don't you? So, I think when I've helped a few start up their own businesses, is one thing I've focused on is what I call a bare-ass minimum. So, what does it cost us to cover the running costs of our business? And can we get that covered as a first goal?
Yeah, because there's the trap of when you're starting a business, like of having too much cash and money because you're not hungry enough to get out there and get some work.
Yeah, hustle, yeah.
So you need that balance. And I think you're right, John, like if you could do a budget, okay, this is what the first year looks like.
Yeah.
Pretend if you wanted to start a little cafe, little espresso bar hole in the wall.
Yeah. Like, okay, there's not enough of those.
No. So it might be like, I would actually funnel it right down to say, okay, this is how much it's going to cost me just in expenses.
Yes.
So rent, insurance, stock, whatever.
Yeah.
Everything, phone bill, Wi-Fi access for the espresso bar, all that stuff. And then go, plus, I need to earn a salary.
Yes.
So even if that's 60 grand to start or 55, whatever yours is, then we can actually factor that right down to how much I need to make a day. And it might be I need 2 months worth of expenses in my bank account before I press go.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not that different from running your personal cost to exist, is it?
Yeah. So Harriet, as much as possible, but just make sure you're out of consumer debt. Anonymous asks, as first home buyers in Sydney, my partner and I paid a 20% cash deposit on both the vacant land, 424K, and construction worth 300 on their principal place of residence. When our home is finally built and we move in, what's the process of getting our home valued and using the equity to purchase our first property, investment property in Sydney?
Good question. So 725 all told will be the value or cost.
Yep.
The process is just simply getting that lender to do a valuation on completion and walk through. It's all done, carpeted, etc., and see what the valuation comes in at. From a lending point of view, however, that's a very different story, depending on what loan you've got. So if you get excited and it comes in at 800K as a new value on completion, 80% of that is essentially how we calculate the equity minus the debt, right? So if you've got a value of 800K, but the debt's 700, there won't be anything there to use to pull out as equity. So, it's a tough one. If the valuation comes in at what the actual total costs were, but really depends on what their debt is.
Yeah, and I think any mortgage broker worth their weight in salt or whatever the saying is, they will be able to help you through this process and just tell you the information and the process. Because you could go back to your mortgage broker and they could go, look, based on what you've got now, and I know that your work's this and, you know, we had to use this lender over here for your situation based on this construction.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure this lender over here might be a better rate anyway. Let's send out and get a couple of ours from a couple of different lenders.
Yeah.
And go from there.
Yeah. And I think you'll get a feel generally, won't you, when it's complete, see what's sold in the area for the same sort of product, same size land as to know.
But I mean, Anonymous, you've done well to have a 20% cash deposit. So well done.
Yeah.
Claire asks, insurances, how do you know what type of income protection insurance to get? When should you get it? And is the one that comes with your super enough? So
that's your domain.
Yeah. So I'll have a one or two things to say on this. Number one, if you haven't listened to the episode I've done on insurance, head back our first season, episode 141, and we take a really deep dive in insurance. If you're listening to this around June, July 2020, we've got an insurance webinar coming up, which we're just going to go narrow and deep into insurances. So just go to the sortyourmoneyout.com website, click webinars, and register for that. There'll be no cost. But the ones with your super fund, the short answer is they're not enough. They're a default amount of cover.
Yeah.
So they might say, here's $2,000 as a monthly benefit, where based on your income, 75% of your income, you might be entitled to $4,500 monthly benefit. Okay.
So by law, do they need to have that in their superannuation?
No.
No?
No.
But they just have it.
Yeah, it's just a default member benefit. Now, when should you get it? Well, if you've got an income, you need to insure it. If you don't need to insure it, it means you don't need it. And if you don't need it, why are you working for it? Mm-hmm. So it is an asset. You bought a car worth 15, 20 grand. You insure that for $1,100 a year. You've got an income of 50, 60 grand a year, whatever that is. I'd recommend insuring that asset as well for $1,200 a year. That's also tax deductible. So we're pro insurance here and just setting out our foundations in our life. And if you do want to speak to somebody to set up your personal income insurances, we recommend you go to sortyourmoneyout.com, click get help, and I'll refer you to a trusted advisor on our panel.
Yeah,
because you really, I can't answer this question in 5 minutes.
No.
But Claire, if you are working and you're in good health, I would imagine that you should consider this as part of your financial foundations.
Is there any occupation where you'd say you maybe don't need it as much as others?
In terms of, well, let's remember, John, income insurances doesn't cover you for redundancy or getting fired.
No.
It's only accident and illness.
Yeah. So it generally, regardless of your occupation, it's your own health that's
well, and it's like I was going to call my insurance company the other day because remember how I hurt both my hands?
Yeah.
I hurt them renovating the house, basically.
Yeah.
And that had nothing to do with my occupation.
Yeah.
It just meant I couldn't actually hold a microphone the other day or pick up my phone.
Mm.
So I thought, oh, there might actually be a claim here because it could have taken 6 weeks to get better. But
didn't your laptop land on both hands?
What do you mean?
When you were working?
No.
No.
I don't know. John. The people said no lame jokes in the one-star review. So Claire, absolutely reach out and I would encourage everybody to listen to episode 141. And there's been plenty of listeners, and I congratulate you for reaching out and actually getting insured, because the reason why you want to get insured and factor that into your budget, because when you want to buy your first home or your second home, we want to make sure if your income stops from an accident or illness, that the money keeps coming through the door to fund the mortgage repayments, to fund your rent, to just to keep
live life,
your life going.
Yeah.
Yep. Joe asks, and this is a good one for you, John, at what level of income does negative gearing actually become worthwhile? So is there actually a level of income?
As high as possible.
Yeah.
It's definitely more effective for high income earners. So 45 cents is the top tax bracket. So that's where it's at its highest benefit. If you're below that, then it means that you're claiming back your running expenses at 37 cents in the dollar versus 45, or 32 versus 45. So I don't think there's a level, but generally speaking, the 45 bracket is 180K plus, isn't it, at the moment? So that's where you get some nice cream from your tax returns. But it speaks to something that we spoke about on the property podcast, was what's our cost before tax? What's our cost after tax? It's very personal to you.
Mm. And I guess, you know, if I can excuse the people who are, you know, financially woke and sophisticated and who are just kind of here for the encouragement, can you explain for someone who might not actually know what negative gearing is?
Yeah. So in a very basic sense, if we've got a property, it might give us 25 grand of income through rent for the year, and the expenses going out for that same period is 30 grand. We've got a 5 grand negative loss, right? So we're negatively geared, or negative gearing that 5 grand against our income tax rate. So let's say it's 45 cents in the dollar. We're claiming back that 5 grand at 45 cents. So it's still costing us money to hold that property. Right now, where people might get an advantage, and this is why accountants talk to this, is depreciation. So the depreciation you can claim back, but it doesn't actually cost you money. So you might be able to claim 10 grand worth of depreciation in 1 year, but you haven't actually spent that 10 grand. So that, I want to stop it there because it can get complicated after that. But essentially your income is less than your expenses, and then you've got an after-tax position.
Yeah, and I guess you technically can't have a negative or positively geared property if you own it outright. So if you look at gears and the little cogs, so it could be one little cog connected to a big cog, so you've actually used leverage. So with gearing, it basically means you've got extra help, and that help is debt. So if I gear a property, it means I've got a debt against it, essentially.
Yes. Yep.
So the net result of that leverage or the gearing to the property, it will either be, okay, so I've borrowed money to buy a property, or it's still running at a loss because of the costs of the borrowing.
Yeah.
Or I've borrowed money to buy a property and it's running at a surplus or a positive. So it's then positively geared. So it's just what happens with the borrowing costs, whether geared negatively or positively. So just remember, gearbox in a car or on your watch, there's all these little cogs turning, they're rolling around.
Yes.
And it's leverage. It could be my property's leveraged negatively or leveraged positively.
Yeah. So, and just to finish on that topic, we look at the real costs versus the actual costs. So the real costs are my insurance, my property management, the interest on the loan, etc. The actual cost is, well, now I can claim the depreciation.
Yeah, what's the wash up?
Yeah. So whilst it's negatively geared, it might not be costing you money. But if we buy a 1970s property that's got no depreciation benefits, we could actually be losing money on that property.
Well, guys, thanks for listening to my Millennial Answers. It's been a pleasure as usual. And remember, we've got a heap of webinars coming. So make sure you check out sortyourmoneyout.com. or the show notes, and we'll put a link to the webinars in there. All right,
bye.
See ya.
If you're after personal financial advice, this podcast is not for you. But if you do want a financial advisor or mortgage broker to talk with about your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com, click Get Help, and we'll put you in touch with one of our trusted professionals.
This podcast supports A21, a charity focused on abolishing slavery and human trafficking all over the world. Check out a21.org.au for more info. If you want some other giving options, or if you are unsure about which charity you can support, head to thelifeyoucansave.org.au.
Thanks to Jess Knaus, producer, Nathan Robertson, editor, and me, Asher. Anyway, make sure you're connected via Instagram and our free Facebook group. We also film most of our content now, so check out My Millennial Money on YouTube.